welcome to this episode of the Thought Cloud podcast. My name is Amy Al-Khatib, and I'm your host. Today's guest is Michael Joshua. He's the Vice President of Global Marketing at SkyDefense. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Hey, Amy, thanks for having me.
So the reason I invited you onto the show today is because your company deals with protecting against and mitigating attacks on critical infrastructure, which like pretty much everything in the cyber world, the threats have become more, the vulnerabilities have become more, and the actual occurrence of attacks have also increased. So could you just talk about the types of attacks that can happen on critical infrastructure to start out with there? And then we'll kind of explore it a little bit more to see like why those types of things are happening and what we can do to prevent it.
Sure. So yeah, like you mentioned, this is pretty much what we do on a day-to-day basis. And even before we get into that, Gartner, our friends, the analyst company, they released a new report. It's called Predicts 2022 Cyber Physical System Security. And one of their key findings was actually pretty concerning. They say that attacks on organizations and critical infrastructure have increased dramatically from less than 10 in 2013 to almost 400 in 2020. And that's a change of 3,900%. So that's pretty alarming. And when we think about attacks that happen in critical infrastructure, the first thing is the, disruption. So if we're talking about electricity or the power grid, if it's freezing outside, it's right. And all the power cuts out, people are stuck at home, really, really cold, right? That's definitely not good. Regarding, oil and gas, think about what happened with Colonial Pipeline. Granted, this an attack, a ransomware attack on the IT side, which caused the OT side pretty much to hit that stop button. And there were shortages. People were not able to, to purchase gasoline, to travel places, to go around. And if you think about water, an attack on water, there were multiple this year, but the most famous one that got all the attention was the attack that happened in Oldsmar, Florida, where an attacker tried to change the levels of sodium hydroxide in the water, sort of bringing the water to almost poisonous parameters. And that could have affected lives of everyone who was living there. So when we're talking about attacks on critical infrastructure, we're not talking about the classic, cyber attacks that you see in the movies. These types of attacks can legitimately harm innocent civilians. And this is pretty much what keeps us awake at night.
Yeah, you brought up a lot of things there that I want to hit on, but I was going to ask at some point, how much effort you thought, or if you had any data to back it up about the effort that's being put into attacks on critical infrastructure versus other types of cyber attacks. But, even with the increase in phishing and ransomware and all the different kinds of threats that we see out there, I don't think that they are increasing at the rate of 3,000%. So it seems like this is an area specifically right now that is being targeted more than others. Would you think that that was an accurate statement?
That is very accurate. And regarding effort of attacks, I mean, come to think about it, the standard computer that you have today has an antivirus system on it, right? It has a firewall. It has all these like really, really cool technologies that are able to prevent an attack. And even if there is an attack, right? A friend of mine got attacked recently through some phishing. Basically what happened was he needed to bring in his computer to the IT team. They changed a couple of his passwords. They removed the malware, but he was up and running in 2 hours again. with you know, critical infrastructure attacks, if you knock down a process, right, this can, it's sort of like a chain of things that are happening, and it prevents the things from going forward. And this can take, you know, weeks or sometimes months to recover from, but the effort is different here, because on a computer, you have all these technologies. When you look at critical infrastructure, a really good example is, you know, even in manufacturing, you have all these like really expensive machines, right? And the power grid, and they're very expensive, and they're purchased to do certain functions repeatedly for many years. And they're very dependable. They're very reliable, but they've been around sometimes for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. They might not even have an operating system, or if they do, it's probably a really old one or something that's embedded from within. And you cannot install a cybersecurity agent on that machine. And a lot of stuff in the industrial side and in critical infrastructure, it's hard to put security on those actual machines. So getting into those is much easier than it is to a standard computer. And if you want to speak about what happened with COVID, it was really interesting because we have a lot of workers who are working from remote. And for many years, there was this whole ideology that if you air gap or completely isolate these industrial networks from the internet, then they won't be able to get attacked. Well, when with COVID happened and a lot of remote work needed to be done, you know, people had to work from home to continue to keep the lights on. What they did was they opened those networks, which never were meant to be open in the first place, and attackers were able to remotely access a lot of those things. And that's why so many attacks were happening over the last 2 years. So it's been a very big problem.
So in terms of vulnerabilities, you mentioned that, you know, one of the main things is the remote work that was occurring when the network wasn't designed to be opened up like that. But do you think that another cause for some of the increase in these attacks has to do with the fact that so many of the machines and actually like the buildings themselves are like everything's connected now where it wasn't so much before? And so there's more individual pieces of equipment that we need to secure than we did in the past? Or does that equipment have like some sort of built-in cybersecurity with it where that isn't posing more of a risk than it would in other areas?
You brought up a few really, really good points over there, also regarding the vulnerabilities and also about the growing attack landscape or the threat landscape. Well, what we see now in industrial is the growing amount of IoT devices or Internet of Things devices, both on the enterprise side and on the industrial side. Gartner also mentions that there should be around 25 billion connected IoT devices by the year 2025, which is not so far from now. And many of those IoT devices are, you know, they're connected to the internet. They have call to home functions, sometimes to servers in China. They have they have default passwords. And there's a lot of security concerns with those new devices that are connected to the internet, and they are able to bring more attackers into those networks. And as the attack surface grows, it just gives, you know, attackers more ability to get into the network. There's actually a pretty funny story that I read on the news. It happened, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. There was a cyber attack on a casino in North America where the attackers were able to hack the casino through the smart thermostat on the fish tank. So attackers are getting creative, but what they were able to do is they were able to use this this connection to move laterally within the network to steal a lot of data. I believe it was 11 gigabytes that were stolen, and they were sent to some location in Europe. And yeah, when you just add more devices that are connected to the internet, you're adding more to the attack surface and allowing more people in who shouldn't be in there in the first place.
It's funny that you bring up that story, because before I was at Mission Critical, I worked for one of our sister magazines, ACHR News, which is air conditioning, heating, and refrigeration news. So I remember reading about that story because it was HVAC related. And then we had, you know, that brought up like new conversations at that point, because it was something that was really kind of like a new form of an attack. So yeah, I remember that, and it was pretty interesting. So at your company, do you guys participate in the risk assessment where you're evaluating the threats that exist and the vulnerabilities, or are you just on the mitigating side?
So we love to, you know, do what the customers ask us to do. In general, we are mostly on the mitigation side of things. We have this great software that helps our customers have visibility into everything that's happening in their network. First of all, to understand which devices they have, who is connected to whom, which communications are going, which devices are communicating with whom, which protocols are being used. What are the network subnets, right? When you have that sort of visibility, you sort of understand everything that's happening, but it's not uncommon that we do incident response work for some of our clients. So yes, we do have experts who have been in this field for years. And at the beginning, we always go over the risk assessment with the customer. It's sort of like part of the package of what it is that we have to offer, although it's not something that we sell. It's something that we offer, because ultimately we really care about the security of not only the workers in the factory, but everyone who can be impacted by this. And that's our mission, to protect the innocent civilians. So yes, we do this. Like I mentioned, incident response is also something that we do. You know, there was a pharmaceutical company that got attacked right on the onset of COVID. They needed to make those medicines to save lives of people. And we were able to get there on site and help them flush out the attackers, find out what it is they were doing, do some reverse engineering work. You know, we have security and research teams who do that for us. And ultimately, it's our mission to keep the world a safe place. And whatever the customers ask from us, that's the service that we provide.
Like you mentioned something before when you were talking about attacks against, you know, the grid or our water system, or, you know, just how it can actually harm people physically and, you know, sometimes maybe even cost people lives. So what do you think about the idea of, you know, major utilities or like different types of institutions where people could be harmed if there was an attack, sort of opening it up to hackers where it's like, hey, if you find a way to hack into our system, bring that attack to us and like we'll compensate you in some way? And where do you think that falls in line with the ethics?
Okay. So regarding the first part of your question regarding lives that were affected, there were two people who were already killed over the course of, you know, during this pandemic, one in 2020 and one in 2021 due to ransomware in hospitals. The first one happened somewhere in Europe. I believe it was in Germany. Attacker group hacked a hospital with ransomware. They said, pay us or else you won't get access to your devices. The hospital needed to route other people. This was, of course, during the first wave of COVID. And one of the patients wasn't able to get the medical care that they needed, and they passed away. The second one was in 2021. It was with a baby. I believe it was in an Alabama hospital. Also, the hospital was under ransomware. And yeah, I mean, attackers will sometimes give you some hogwash about ethics. Yeah, we don't attack. But at the end of the day, many attackers are not the nicest people in the world. Not all of them are motivated by money. Unfortunately, I've seen a very sort of scary trend this year, something called killware. So it's not like ransomware where they're after the money. It's killware where they're after, you know, destroying things. For example, the Oldsmar attack in Florida, the attacker, whether it was an amateur attacker or not, we still don't know who the attacker was. They weren't after money. They were after poisoning people. They wanted to mess with the sodium hydroxide. They wanted to bring it to poisonous proportions. We've had the black energy attack in Ukraine back in 2015, where there was a conflict between Russia and Ukraine. I think they were fighting with one another, and attackers basically disabled the power grid, destroyed things via malware. And even did a DDoS attack on the a distributed denial of service attack on the call center. So when customers are trying to call and ask what's going on, they shouldn't be able to reach them. So we are seeing more of these cases, which is pretty alarming. I don't know. I don't really trust attackers. I don't trust their ethics. I can even tell you a story with one of our customers. They were in an exchange with a group of cyber attackers. This was, of course, before they purchased our product. They got attacked. They were I think 250 of their servers were encrypted, and the attacker said, "You know what? Let's not make a big deal about this. Just pay us, you know, X amount in Bitcoin, and we'll give you back all of your information." So, company said, "All right, we'll pay the attackers." They got the money that they needed, and they asked them for instructions of where to send it to them. Then the attackers are like, "Oh yeah, we just raised the price." And then basically they understood these attackers, they don't really have ethics. They're just going to continue playing around with us. And that's pretty much when they brought the Skate Offense team in to sort of flush out the attackers. And well, it saved them a lot of money and a lot of time, and now they're secure. But yeah, I don't really trust these thieves, robbers, or unethical people with ethics and morals. Sorry.
Oh, no apologies needed. I just, you know, it's like an idea that I have heard of, and I'm currently in a graduate program studying cybersecurity. So of course we learn about, you know, practicing like being ethical in what we do, because while we're learning about different threats and attacks, like we're also sort of learning how to do some of them, you know, so there's a lot of focus on being ethical in everything that you do, but the question sometimes is brought up, like in different scenarios where I've heard, and I've never checked this out, so I don't know if it's true or not, but I've heard that there's like a website that you can go to for NASA, where it's like, if you can hack into one of their satellites, like you get money for that. And it's, you know, it's sort of like the catch me if you can, like FBI thing, right? Where they have like criminals work for them because there's that mindset, and you can help find other people who are doing it faster, you know, figure out the ways that they're looking into it. But in my readings, you know, there's a lot of stuff about how no matter what the reason is that you're doing something, like hacking into something or, you know, like using your skills, even if it's for a good purpose, like it's still an unethical means of getting there sometimes. So yeah, that was my curiosity.
Okay. Yeah, you're right.
So I guess in terms of you know, just focusing on like major utilities and like healthcare facilities where people's lives are at stake. What are some of the things that organizations can do to proactively work on mitigating these attacks or like, you know, lessening the damage of them when they do occur?
All right. Well, it starts with visibility. You can't protect what you cannot see. I mean, otherwise it's just like, you know, you're sitting there in a dark room and you're like, I wonder what's here. So when you turn on the light and you understand what's happening, that's the first key. I mean, I can tell you stories of you know, customers who we've spoken to, and they have a whole list of all the assets that they manage, and it's all on these really convenient Excel sheets. And we ask them, Bob, how many assets do you have? How many assets do you want us to protect for you? And they'll tell me, oh yeah, we have 10,000 assets. And we're like, okay, that's great. And then when we go ahead and we install, the platform, we're actually able to see that they don't have 10,000, they have 12,000. And from those extra 2,000 devices that they didn't account for, 200 of those are connected to the internet, which is a very, very big problem. So number one, understanding what you have. Once you understand what you have, then you need to know who is connected to whom, right? You need to know which devices are communicating with which devices, right? They communicate, these machines communicate with protocols. That's just what they're called. I'm gonna say that again. These machines communicate with something called protocols. Now, amongst those protocols, there are some protocols that are safe to use that have encryption, and there are some protocols that are not, which are really old, like SMB version 1, which was famous for the WannaCry attack. So you need to know not only who's connected to whom, but you need to know how they're communicating to one another. Another thing which is important is network segmentation. The reason I say this is sometimes organizations will allow third-party workers, like maintenance workers, to access certain devices on their network. Now, if those devices are just connected to the network and they aren't segmented, which means that would mean that the third party worker will actually have access to everything on the network, which is a pretty big mistake. So segmentation, although it's not a silver bullet, it's something that really does help, because even if an attack would happen on this third party machine, it wouldn't go too far. It would just be limited to that part of the network. So segmentation is also important. But yeah, ultimately it's keeping the network hygiene up and keeping the risk down. And the better organizations do that, the less damage will occur once they would get attacked.
I know that probably the majority of the attacks that are happening on critical infrastructure are not occurring from something that happens internally on the network, like, you know, some of the like the phishing scams and stuff like that. But that still is a vulnerability for these organizations, just like it is for every single other one. So I think a lot of companies don't invest as much as they should into training for security. Probably just because, you know, it's like anything else. Like if it's not happening to you currently, then you think you're fine. It's always like an afterthought. But do you see in your experience with working with your clients that customers who do have more of a critical role in everybody's life, are they doing something above and beyond to make sure that their employees are trained and practicing like safe hygiene themselves, just when it comes to things like email and file sharing and stuff like that?
So if you're asking about my customers, then the answer is yes. These are companies who are proactive. Granted, they have the visibility, and not just my customers, customers of our competitors. These are organizations that are taking things seriously, and they want to have that visibility, that detection into their networks. Now, however, there are many companies who either don't have these types of technologies and they're sort of in the dark, because most of these attacks, especially on the critical infrastructure side, not only are they from malicious attackers, we also have attacks that are made because of human error. And the reason why is because on the industrial side, you have engineers, people who know how the machines work, how the processes work, but these people aren't so skilled in cybersecurity, which means that they would sometimes make a critical mistake that would leave a certain part of the network vulnerable, and then the attackers can get in. So organizations do need to invest in the education of their workers, especially the engineers who are holding the keys to such important technologies, who can do so great. Well, what's the quote from with great power comes great responsibility? I think it was from Stan Lee, right? But that's literally what it is. Now, there's also another thing that can be addressed over here. It's not just about human error. It could also be insiders. I don't know if you're aware, there was a town in Australia called Maroochy, where an insider attack. It was one of the workers who was fired or was let go, or I don't know, there was some issue with him. And he decided that he's going to remotely, through some radios, pour a ton of toxic waste into their water, killing thousands of animals. Basically, the place is a swamp. This happened in the year 2000, I believe. So I believe it was like, yeah, it was almost 22 years ago. The place is still a swamp. The place got destroyed because of an insider. And insiders are people who have, you know, admin and, you know, passwords, credentials, and have the power. And organizations need to know if somebody's changing things, if things are happening, they need to understand, you know, that things are happening. And this is something that technologies like detection for industrial cybersecurity, this is also something that that can be protected.
Yeah, I agree. And I think just, you know, not even in a cybersecurity perspective, but just in security in general, I think, you know, I've worked at places where we had, you know, codes we had to type into the doors so only employees could access, but like they never changed the code. Like we didn't have individual codes, or they didn't change them when people quit or got fired. And, you know, like, I mean, people who had access to the safe, it was the same thing. Like they didn't change the safe code when those people didn't work there anymore. So I think there's just things that, you know, like I said, they take time and effort and sometimes money. And if you haven't been affected by it personally or known someone who has, you kind of think it's like, you know, people are just trying to sell you something or like whatever, because you've been fine so far. So you think you're going to be fine forever. But unfortunately, that's not the way it works. And when it comes to, you know, cybersecurity specifically, like you said, like a 3,000% increase just in one aspect of, cyber attacks. So they're happening in all different areas and to people and businesses and, you know, governments and utilities and everything. So it is happening. And I think, you know, it is really important to safeguard against it. I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm studying it, but also because of that, I feel like this podcast interview is unfair to you, because I feel like I'm just asking you a million questions because I'm curious, and I could keep doing it forever, but I won't. I'll cut myself off here.
No, keep coming. I mean, if there's anything that we can share, we're happy. Come on.
Well, I appreciate it, and I really appreciate your time today for coming on the show and sharing the information with me and other people in the industry who I think, you know, need to hear it, because I know I didn't realize how bad it was getting in that specific you know, sector, but I think it'll open up a lot of people's eyes, and I think that if we have a collective effort amongst the industry, because everything is so connected, it's not just like, it's not just specific organizations that have to think about it. It's like you said, like everybody who's manufacturing these things and designing them, it has to be something that is, you know, from start to finish with all of the equipment that's going into whatever it is, like a data center or a plant or the electrical grid. So I think the industry is moving in that direction, and I'm glad you are here to share some of that knowledge. So thank you.
Sure. And if I could also end, it's not all, you know, it's not all gloom and doom in our industry. There's actually a lot more awareness to all of this. Of course, the President Biden administration is putting a lot of emphasis on securing critical infrastructure. And this is one of the reasons why there's so much awareness and so much movement in the market, which is great. But my message to everybody in the space is, don't be scared, be prepared. So it's all about, being ready. So like a well-prepared network, for instance, is very difficult to attack. Number two, it slows down the attackers and it allows us, the defenders, to take action. And number three, it's still attacked occasionally, but the damage which is caused is minimal. So also, there are also many ways to plan for something like this, right? Just like, if you play sports, right? I used to be an athlete. I played college football for 5 years. And before every game, there was practice, right? You needed to get into that mode. You have to understand what it's going to be like. And when you have practice, you're ready for the real thing. So, there should be like a fire drill, right? Prepare. If an attack happens, who's the person that we speak to? If that person who isn't available, who's the next person that we speak to? What are the actions that we do? And instead of, everyone being panicking and running out for the exit whenever there is a fire, similarly with an attack, if everything is, prepared in advance, you're able to prevent a lot of mistakes that could happen down the line. And it's all about being prepared. And if you do that and keep your network hygiene up and your risk down, then you should be fine.
Yeah. I think, I've lived that myself, where I've been through an experience where I wasn't prepared. And I've thought, when you think of some things like natural disasters or, just like catastrophic events, it's in your mind, it seems like there's no way to actually be prepared for it. But it's crazy how far, like just something like a checklist goes, or, like a chain of command, like you said, like, let me talk to this person. And if they're not there, let me go do this. So there definitely are ways to be prepared. And even though that won't prevent things from happening, like you said, it definitely will minimize the effect of it. So we'll see, in the future how things go, and I'm going to be studying for a few more years, because it's a complicated topic and I can only do so many classes at once, but I'm excited to be learning more about it, and I'm glad I have this platform with the podcast and the magazine to talk to experts like yourself in the industry about it, so that I can help other people learn about it while I'm in the process. So maybe we will be talking again sometime in the future.
Yep. And what's funny is I've been in this industry for many years, and every day I learn something new. So just be ready.
Yep. So I'm trying to get ready for, this is like my last week of class here, and I have all of my my final assignments to get in and my final exam. So I'm cramming in as much information as I can right now. And hopefully other people are doing some of the same. But that was all I had for you today. So for everybody listening, tune in next time to another episode of the Thought Cloud Podcast.